Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
We're going to start with three word pairs: Amsterdam or Tel Aviv?
I think it's Tel Aviv. Yeah. This is home. We are very attached to Amsterdam. It's a city that welcomes us in an amazing way, and we are very grateful for that. And we love the city. And we are also attached to Spain in a way because we have our European team there. And I lived for a few years in Spain, so it's always kind of a second home. But Tel Aviv, we started as a partnership, professional, first of all, and then in life. And we have a family here, and we have the sea and the great energies of the city. So, yes.
Your roots?
My roots are, you know, all over a bit. But they start in South America, then they move to Europe, then they move to the Middle East. But our beginnings, our collaboration, our life, you know, together, everything starts here.
From a bird's eye view on Amsterdam and Tel Aviv, in a way they are very different because Tel Aviv is a city that doesn't have any tradition. You know, it's a new city with people coming from all over the diaspora, you know. It's a melting pot that is trying to make sense of everything that comes our way. And then you move to Amsterdam, which is, wow, there's history, there's tradition. It's like two extremes. But at the same time, we find the Dutch people extremely, extremely inventive and imaginative and thinking out of the box. And Tel Aviv is the same. I mean, we are very open-minded. We don't have any weights on our shoulders. Anything you dream is real. So I think when we came to Amsterdam, we really felt at home in terms of the people, because Tel Aviv is a city about people. We don't have monuments. We don't have grand boulevards. We don't have statues on the street. And it's really about the people.
Tel Aviv is where your heart is, obviously, no?
A big portion of it. Not all of it. But listen, we have here our families as well. Our daughters, our grandchildren, very close friends. But at the same time, because we are used to move from one place to another and we like to make new friends, we find out that we know how to create our home away from home in almost every place that we are. This is also part of our design approach. When we are looking at design and the process, it's a bit anthropological. It's about looking at people, understanding how people behave, what are their needs, what are the reasons they do certain things. And you need to be very open and you need to be not judgmental in order to really understand. And I think that this helps also to make friends.
Definitely. Let's go to the second pair.
Design style or evolution revolution?
Of course, evolution revolution.
Are both of you the same opinion?
No, I'm getting worried. We don't move the vase. This is a joke, internal joke.
We're not a beauty committee. We're really anthropologists. I think we have a language. There's a language, how we tell a story, how we design things. But it has nothing to do with style because you can tell a story in so many ways. If you look at the projects that we do, for someone who doesn't know what he's looking at and you were showing, let's say, a list of 20 projects, he would think probably that there's 20 offices that did these projects, 20 different. And in a second look, you would see there's something you cannot put the finger on, but some sense that runs through all of them, because we are, at the end of the day, who we are. It's a methodology that we have developed in the last 20 years. But this methodology inside gives us the utmost freedom to dream and to aspire for things and look for things and follow things that we don't know. It's not style. It's really evolution or revolution. This is who we are. We are so curious. We always move. We actually don't have like a safe zone. We move out of it every day, every minute. And we allow other things to inundate us, you know, and we are immersed in so much new information and new understandings and new insights that we are able to take them and set on a journey which we've never set to. So it's like every project is a new journey, and we know where we start, we never know where we end. That's why style is not relevant for us.
Sometimes clients, new clients, those that we did for them projects, they already know, they don't ask questions at the beginning. They only give information. But the new ones, they said, do you see already something in your mind? And we said, actually, we don't see anything. We don't see anything. We don't want to have preconcepts about things. So our methodology of work, in order to give a wake-up call to your inspiration and your creativity, it's not to deal with architecture and design, actually. It's to deal with other things that they are not in the language of architecture and design. They are about history, about this fashion, about music, about culture, all kinds of things. And we do in the office a kind of research in every single project, no matter if it's a small one or a big one. Before we start to design, we bring the team all together and we say, this is the project, you geographic, you history, you culture, you music. Yeah. Let's meet in another 2 hours. We put everything together and then you feel the connectivity between different fields. And then suddenly you start to understand something that it's the DNA, it's the bones, it's the blood of the project. And you can only know that if you know who are the parents. From that point, we start to develop the design language, but never at the beginning.
Which leads us to our last word pair, functional designer or narrative creator?
I don't think that one goes against the other.
Okay, yeah, that's true. It's not a comparison.
To be functional, it's part of your professionalism, okay? You create design for needs of people. So you need to understand what they need. You cannot unite great good if not do a sculpture or a painting or a artistic object. But what we do is creating context for emotions, actually. It's spaces where people can live their life and experience emotions. So we need to understand how they behave in space.
What takes their emotions?
Yes, and that brings us to the functionality of things. If we are talking about the design, one of the most important things in our view, it's the flow of how people walk the project, how they are going to behave. It's less about the textures, the objects. They will come at the end of the day. But to create a special experience, this is the most important thing, because then it's about taste, you know, maybe what I like less, things that I look at them and I say, this is horrible. And there are people that they say that this is amazing. But when people say, I feel great in this space, and you don't need them to explain why, but this is our main goal when we are coming to design something, understand people, understand their behavior, and then to create the flow in the space. Functionality, creation, it's all together.
Yes, I think it was Coco Chanel who said that if it's not comfortable, then it's not beautiful. And I think this goes the same with architecture. You know, if it's not functional, then this is not architecture. This is art. This is a statue. This is...
If it doesn't jingle, it doesn't count.
Yes, exactly. So it's about really, these are not negative forces. These are things that complement each other. We use narrative in our work.
Narrative helps you to define the functionality. It's not that the functionality comes first and then the narrative. The narrative comes first. It's not about giving solution for the design.
Or functional details yet.
It's giving a background of how people will feel and behave in the space, actually.
We would like to introduce you personally as well as your studio. So we were confronted with 5 words that describe you: contextual, anthropological, audacious, inventive, and timeless. Irene Kronenberg and Alon Baranowitz use these five words to describe the work of their interior design and architecture studio, named Baranowitz and Kronenberg Architecture, based in Amsterdam and Tel Aviv. During the past 20 years, the studio has become popular for creating hotels, restaurants, and public as well as commercial spaces. With their anthropological approach to design, they create bold, unique objects that inspire people. To achieve this, they sometimes take unusual paths, such as visiting 24 bars in New York in 3 days for a restaurant commission. I'm really curious about that one. So, what's the secret of a successful project? We, Katrina Patrice Varga and Diane Slavic, have the honor and pleasure to talk to Irene and Alon about this today.
In 1999, Irene and Alon founded BK Arc Studio. Their combined experience meant they could apply their design solutions to projects of varying scales from the micro to the macro. Baranowitz and Kronenberg consists of a group of talented architects and designers, all of whom have graduated from institutions around the globe, bringing their worldly cultural experience to our studio's creative work activity. Recently, the office was named Best International Interior Design Studio at the Build Awards. Congratulations on this. Hello and welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. We're very happy to have you with us.
Hello.
Yay. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
You have offices in Amsterdam and Tel Aviv. We know where you are, but our listeners do not know where you are right now. Where are you physically at the moment?
We are in our office in Tel Aviv. A week ago, we were in our office in Madrid. But right now, we are in our main office where it all started. It's here in Tel Aviv.
In an interview, you described your office in five words. The ones we mentioned already: contextual, audacious, inventive, timeless, and anthropological. Now, anthropology is the science of the human being. Primarily, it is understood as a natural science. But you make a design strategy of it. How does that work? And we would really appreciate a detailed description.
Okay. I think we spoke about it a little bit earlier. Every project is a journey that starts with a very deep digging, you know, into the culture, the society, the people, the end users of whatever we are dealing with. We read a lot in many, many layers: culture, history, politics, festivals, music, fashion, art, you know, everything that makes these people, this specific target audience, to understand them. Because everything starts with people and actually ends with people. We travel a lot and we work around the world. We need to get the broadest understanding and the deepest understanding we can get for the people that we are designing for. This takes time, takes efforts. So there's a lot of investigation. We speak to a lot of people while we are visiting the place. We take the time, you know, to sit and watch people. You know, try to understand them, what makes them tick, how they move. Just simple things like distance between people. When two people stand and talk, what is the distance between them and why is it so? This is the level of understanding that we want to know, because otherwise we are just flattening the world, because every culture is so specific and so wonderful and has so much to give, has so much to teach us. So why flatten it, you know, with preconceived ideas about how people should behave?
Yeah, you could also go to 24 bars in 3 days.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a story by itself, you know. It's quite a funny story. At least here in Israel, we didn't have cellular phones at that time. I don't know if people use cellular phones in 1999 and we started in 2000. Yes. Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, we didn't have the clients, that they are very good clients, that we did for them many projects. They come to us and they said, listen, we would like to have the best design, cool bar ever here in Tel Aviv. We said, okay, good. And they went and we looked at each other and said, we are not going to bars, you know, every night. It's not our way of life. It's not our thing. We understood that there is a cultural thing, a behavioral thing that we need to understand that we don't understand. We understood that in Tel Aviv at that time, you have bars, but they were not the kind of bars that they talk about. Those kind of bars, even in London, you didn't have them. Then in Europe, in New York, that time was the place for. So we finalized our conversation about 2 hours after the clients left the office. We called the travel agent and we said, arrange us for tomorrow a flight for 4 days because we need to fly. And we had a list of 24 bars. We did 8 bars each evening because during the day you cannot. So 8 bars either, and no cameras because you cannot take photos, only sketchbooks. And in the sketchbook, we had details of design or diagrams of how is a pickup bar, why the center is empty, or why the bar is in the center. What kind of interactions you create putting objects in a certain location in the space. And there is a lot to learn from this. And we come home with 2 full book of sketches and we start to design them. Only from that moment, understanding what is this about? What are people looking for when they are dressed up and they go to these kind of bars?
We learned a lot. Even more funny was the story how we presented the bar. It was not common in these days in 1999. We did like a scheme for the bar and we presented just a very general scheme. And around that time, a young man knocked on our door and says,
from America.
Yeah. Just and he said, you know, I'm doing 3D animation for architects. You know, I do like movies, videos. And I really like your office and I would really love to do something, you know, don't charge. I just want to do it with a real project. And we looked at each other and said, we have a bar to do, you know? So I said, you know what? Do you want to do us this bar, like make a clip of 2 minutes, video, animation, showing the bar, you know, with a story, with a... Says, yeah, sure, no problem. This is what I do. A month and a half later, there was silence. You know, we never met the client, you know, nothing. We just showing the sketch. I mean, we saw the clip. It was everything edited with music like it should be. It's a bar, you know, and it's really techno and all of that. And we booked a little cinema, like a home theater place for 20 people. We booked a meeting. They came over. They didn't know where they're coming to. They come to a cinema. They don't understand how is the meeting in the cinema, you know, and we tell them, please sit down, relax. You know, we don't have popcorn, but just wait a few seconds and the show begins. And for 2 minutes, there's silence. You know, they're watching the movie. It ends. They say, can we have another look at it, please? So we had it again. It ends and they say, can we have another look at it, please? The third time, they applauded like this. You know, everybody was a standing ovation, you know? And we told them the only problem is that it cost us twice as you told us the budget. So they said, it's either we do this or we do nothing at all. So you go and design, we'll find the money, and the rest is history. So it was really a fascinating moment.
And that's actually answering already our next question. It's about how do you manage to create emotions to seduce, but not to forget the user centricity. So, I mean, that explains it actually in a fantastic way.
Yeah. So let's move to the next question.
Yeah.
We are people, you know, we're designed for people. If you don't love people, don't be in this profession. Please, no way. You know, it's like, it's not for you. We don't need you. So this passion, you know, this primal, primordial, you know, need for being together, coming together, you know, understanding that you are not alone in the world and it's not only about you and there are other talents and other people and other values and other cultures and other all of that. And you want to bring them all together. But in order to do that, the glue, you have to understand which glue, you know, to use for each and every project to bring those people together. It's not easy. It takes a lot of effort.
Is there any restaurant or hotel that you've visited during your travels that you still remember until today?
Yes. And you know something, it's always when we are coming to a new hotel or restaurant, you know, we look at the design and we always have what to say. And that's why when we are on our own vacations, we are completely neutral. And we can be like in a small house, 50 meters next to the beach with nothing around us. We need this very much in order to clean ourselves and to restart. I must say that design by itself, it's never the only thing, you know, it always comes with something else. That's why we understand that the way we work, trying to create context for emotions, actually, not design as something that is touristic and life doesn't touch it, okay? It's so important. We remember very well an experience that we have in the children firehouse. It was great, you know. It's not the kind of design that we do at all, but it was well done. But all what was around that experience made it unforgettable. This is the thing, because when it's only about design, you know, you always will find something that it's not perfect, because perfection, it's not part of the language of design.
I mean, what we do at the end of the day is basically a platform. And then life comes on this platform and treat it or use it in so many ways that even us, we couldn't imagine it. And I think that you can design the most beautiful restaurant or the most beautiful hotel, but if the team doesn't perform, they don't care, you know, what good is it? It's good for nothing because nobody will go there. You know, we are kind of a toolbox in a way, but if I design you this beautiful car that has 13 shifts, but you only drive 4 every day, you know, there are 9 shifts that you are not using that can bring you into new sensations, and nobody's using it because nobody knows. So why go so far? You know, why spend the time, the money, and so on? So again, we're returning to the human factor, because without a team that is compassionate 24/7 and taking your design and taking it to the next level, design doesn't mean anything. You know, we're not building monuments. We want people to use them, and we want them to empower people, to inspire people, to let them be who they are and better. It's for their well-being, and they should use it and use it the way they see fit.
And they are not the same all times that they are in the same space. The space, in a way, not in the feeling of the space, but the materials is always the same. The same person that comes one, twice, or three times is never the same.
Yeah, well, you can never enter the same river twice, as we know.
Yeah.
The thing is that our projects are basically open-ended. They are open for interpretation. If you bring 20 people into our project, each one will think differently about it, and that's the great thing about it. And it's like that you read throughout your life. When you are 6, you read it in a certain way. When you are 20, you read it in a different way. And when you're older, and so on and so forth. And I think that great design is exactly as that specific book. You know, I always speak about The Little Prince, you know, it's such a beautiful book by Saint-Exupéry. And so when children read it, they read it in some sort of way, you know, and then they read it to their grandchildren and they understand it totally different.
Yes.
If we can make architecture like this, wow, this is unbelievable.
Thinking about beauty, do you use the word beauty or is that kind of forbidden?
Forbidden? No. But, no.
Not appropriate.
No. We know how to admire a beauty. But the beauty is an end result of something, no? When we are talking about design things, we are mainly into the process. In the process, beauty is irrelevant. Because beauty for me, it's not the beauty for someone else. It's not, it's an end result beauty. It's not something that I want to do it beautiful. It's not the thing.
If you design something and people fall in love with it, or for whatever reason, not for the aesthetics, maybe it's the functional, maybe it's the emotions that it brings up, maybe it's memories that it brings up, that is beautiful. The beautiful is in the eyes of the beholder. It's not in the eyes of the designer. Beautiful is a very subjective thing.
Notion, you know?
like emotions are. So our prime goal is really to create all these things that you were talking about, something which is timeless, something people fall in love with, but they fall in love with it every time they come because they find something new. This is really hard to get, especially today, you know, with the Instagram generations, you know, that everything is like this, but it's not. If you really want to do something valuable, unforgettable, memorable, then it's a different kind of process altogether.
A question to the both of you. You obviously successfully navigate being a husband and wife partnership as well as a business partners. Also in our pre-talk, that was very obvious for us. How do you challenge your different fields of activity, or how do you supplement your challenges?
Well, I'd say that first of all, I need to, you know, to let you know something. We start as partners in business. So
love came later.
Yeah, exactly. So actually we learn how to work together without having this kind of relationship or couple relationship, whatever. And then love comes after a great friendship. Listen, I cannot tell you that it's not challenging, but with the time you learn a lot. You learn to know who is better where. We learn that we are very different from each other. So instead of fighting on our ways, because both of us have quite a serious ego, but anyway, it's about understanding that instead of fighting with the one against the other, it's to try to understand the point of view of the other, the way you work, you enrich the projects in this way. I think that mainly this is that we understand each other. We know who has the best approach on each field, and we learn to listen to each other.
And you know your strengths.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both of us, we have totally different strengths.
Which is fantastic. I mean, if you bring them together.
When it's good, it's amazing. And when it's not, it's okay.
Fantastic. Innovative new concepts are in demand. Let's take a look into the famous crystal ball. Where will we be in 5 or 10 years' time?
I will be in a meeting.
So easy.
That's the shortest answer we got in this whole podcast.
I tell you, Joe, it's very fun. In Russia, during the Stalin times, a guy is going to buy a car. He says, I would like to buy a car. He says, okay, how much do I pay? He says, when do I get my car? He says, you'll get it in 10 years on Sunday, February. So he said, but what do you mean? When exactly? I mean, is it morning time or is it time? So the guy behind him tells him, what do you care? You know, it's 10 years from now. What are you asking him now about? It's morning? No, but listen, at 10 o'clock, I have a plumber.
I want to answer to your question. Yes. In 2 years from now, in 3 years, 4 or 5 years, it is was something, you know, that we, all the design world deal with it a lot. And what we learn on the last 2-3 years is that there is a level of uncertainty that really to say what will be in 10 years from now, it's only to for the sake of saying it. I will give you an example. At the very beginnings of the pandemic, everyone said that this pandemic teaches that everyone is the same. It doesn't matter if you're poor or if you're rich. This pandemic touches everybody, and now people understand that they will be there more kind with each other. I'm not a very politically correct person. And I said, I don't know. I don't know any crisis, war, whatever, that made people better. And everyone was, wow, what you say? So it's a very negativist approach. I don't know. I know that if I look at the history and I try to understand, I don't think that this will bring something in terms of scientific things. So I don't know. But in the behavior of people, nothing would come from that. And we can say right now, the world is not the very best place right now in the universe. And people think more and more about themselves. If you bring this to design, during, you know, the last 2 years, we talk about a lot about community and sharing community, working together, living together, and it exists and it develops, and it's very important. At the same time, you can see in the world of the design, a lot of projects, their main goal is to let you forget that the world is tough. You can see those two extremes. It's okay. We don't judge. Things will develop on that sense. Parallel, like nothing happened. Everything is sweet and nice. And the other hand, okay, in life anyway, you can see that people that they are moving to the cities, more people living in the cities, there are certain things that you understand, you know, that they are almost demographic. You understand that this is the way and you need to find a solution. But those are things that they started like 5-7 years ago, more or less, and they became more strong on the last 2-3 years because we didn't have any option. And then you see that the people, they want to be warm, they want to feel cozy. In Dutch that we know here and there are a few words, they have a word that I don't know any other language, gezellig. It's a word that says the feeling of good. This gezellig in Dutch, this is the way people want to be, and they try to take distance if they can, because not everyone can put this kind of distance because their life, sometimes people have very tough lives. It's difficult, and we need to see this as well. So I really don't know where we will be in 10 years from now.
Thank you very much, Irina and Alon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your time and your inspiring words. It's a goodbye from us until the next episode of Jung Architecture Talks, Jung's Architecture Talks podcast.